We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hello, campers. Hello, self-quarantiners. Hello, self-isolationists. Great to have you along as we get underway with the fourth and final hour here on the penultimate workday of the week, the Thursday afternoon edition, or evening edition, if you prefer. And as always, your input is invited, encouraged, and welcomed. Here is how you join me and be a part of the conversation today. Just grab the phone, use the Ingalls Advantage talk line number, 800-347-1063. Common Sense Retirement Planning text line number, 71307. And my email address, bob@1063WORD.com. Where did I just put what I... There we go. We were talking right before the newscast at the top of the hour about government overreach by so many of these various mayors, city councils, what have you. And our friends Ashley Landis and the folks at the South Carolina Policy Council down in Columbia, who are watchdogs on this very type of thing, have a new piece out today with the title, Local Governments Emergency Power Grabs. Local governments all over the state are adopting emergency measures to combat the COVID-19 outbreak, but not all of them are making their emergency declarations and ordinances easily accessible. State law allows local governments to pass emergency ordinances in one meeting without giving the public any notice or a chance to read them first, and a number of local governments' emergency actions are either incompletely published, difficult to find, or not published at all, leaving citizens in the dark on what their local officials actually enacted. Frequently, the emergency declarations and ordinances contain sweeping, extensive measures that were written to apply to any emergency situation, are often not defined, and are not tailored to stopping the spread of the virus. In addition, they often present potential threats to civil rights and expand the power of local officials, in some cases to an almost unlimited degree. Moreover, the declarations often fail to mention the additional emergency powers that are triggered during emergencies, which can only be seen by searching through the local code. The best approach is for citizens to contact their local officials, city and county, directly to insist that orders and ordinances all be posted in their entirety and that officials answer and explain what these powers mean. Every city and county differs in what they allow during a state of emergency, but here's a sampling of the powers from an analysis of several cities and counties all over the state. Stay-at-home orders. Local laws often allow the freedom of movement and assembly, such as protest, to be curtailed during emergencies with zero criteria for when this would be appropriate and no requirements that it actually address the situation at hand. For instance, the City of Columbia's stay-at-home order, passed in response to the pandemic, requires everyone to stay home unless they are working at or doing business with essential service businesses. Yet, some of these essential businesses include airports, buses and railways, telecommunications and data centers, vehicle sales and rental companies, hotels, the South Carolina Ports Authority, manufacturing, grocery stores, big box stores or wholesale clubs that have grocery and pharmacy services, convenience stores, hardware and building supply stores, dry cleaning businesses, banks, homeless shelters and food banks, construction, nurseries, and residential and commercial real estate. Needless to say, there are plenty of opportunities for virus contagion in these places, more so, in fact, than in many of the small businesses forced to close by this order. Enacting curfews. One of the most common emergency powers is the across-the-board ability to impose a curfew regardless of the type of emergency. Local ordinances typically describe situations in which a curfew could be imposed in broad terms with no detailed criteria for their use and protections against overreach and abuse. For instance, the city of Columbia, which has imposed a curfew in response to the pandemic, authorizes curfews to protect lives, safety, and property when a state of emergency put those things at risk, leaving the practical application of a curfew entirely at the discretion of local officials. It's unclear how limiting nighttime activity would stop the spread of a virus, but the law does not require the curfew to actually achieve that goal or anything else as a condition of imposition. The Columbia law also automatically bans the sale of the following items during the hours of curfew: guns and ammo. It's unlawful to buy, sell, give away, transfer, or dispose of firearms, ammunition, dangerous weapons, or explosives during the curfew hours, or even to possess any of these things off of your own premises. Alcohol. It's unlawful to sell any kind of alcoholic beverage or to possess or consume one off of one's own premises. Gas, unlawful to sell gas, any similar petroleum products, or other combustible or inflammable substances unless the curfew specifically says otherwise. Parts of this local law appear to conflict with state law, which prohibits local governments from regulating gun and ammunition possession, transfers, or transportation, yet numerous local governments contain similar provisions in their codes of law. Banning outright the sale of alcohol and guns. Several counties' laws include the ability to enact 24/7 bans on the sale or transportation of guns, alcohol, explosives, and combustibles, not defined. But whereas in Aiken, this emergency ban can only be enacted by county council, the mayor of Beaufort can prohibit stores from selling guns, ammo, alcohol, and gas at any time the governor or mayor declares a state of emergency. In Horry County, it's automatically illegal to sell alcohol during man-made or natural disasters or acts of aggression, which are not defined, once a state of emergency has been declared. So if the Horry County government considers the COVID-19 virus a man-made or natural disaster, all alcohol sales are currently illegal. Suspending the enforcement of local laws when immediate action outside the law is required. During these declared emergencies, the Myrtle Beach Code of Ordinances authorizes the city manager, an unelected official, to exercise this power at will, subject only to city council ratification as soon as practical. The power to suspend the enforcement of local law is broad and applicable across the board, regardless of the type of emergency. And it goes on to discuss forced evacuations, forcing businesses to close. Under this particular heading, the story says the City of Greenville's Code of Ordinances gives the mayor broad powers to force some or all businesses to close if, in his opinion, they're remaining open for business, quote, might tend to further endanger the property, lives, safety, or general welfare of the people within the city, end quote. There are no parameters placed on this power and no criteria given on the type of emergency where the power could be used. There is more on this, including, among other things, requisitioning private goods and services, using county equipment and personnel on private property, and more. And we will put this up on our Facebook page. I will forward this to Miss Moneypenny as soon as we go to the break, and we'll put it up on our Facebook page, and you can share that at your leisure. And we'll see what exactly the council and Mayor Knox White come up with in tomorrow morning's 10 a.m. meeting. Quarter after six here on the Bobby Mac Show. When we come back on the other side, what do you know? Somebody is going to benefit from the stock market crash, and that somebody would be Paul Pelosi. Yeah, I know you've heard of Nancy. Well, Paul is her significant other. Details on this story from Barron's on the way next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Boom, 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 boom. Welcome back. 6:20 here on the Bobby Mac Show. Let's quickly get back to the phones here this afternoon. Let's go to Hickory Tavern and bring in Sean on the Thursday edition. Hi, Sean, and welcome to the show.
Bobby, thanks for taking my phone call. I wanted to talk quickly. You were mentioning earlier about, you know, pricing and stuff like that across the board. And what I wanted to talk about was in our local area.
Right.
I don't want to necessarily come right out and say it's price gouging. Mm-hmm. Let's say profiteering.
Right.
All right. Monday, I bought eggs for my family to last through April. I went to Aldi, paid 88 cents a dozen.
Okay.
All right. I went into Bilo today to get coffee creamer. It was $2.50 for a dozen eggs.
Wow.
Right. Couldn't believe what I saw. Okay. Earlier this morning in my work truck, we were in Pickens, $1.39 a gallon. Went in to get something to drink, left, didn't get any gas. I got off work, came home. I hit the Spink station, 418 in Fairview. It's $1.65 a gallon, a full 26 cents more.
Yeah. Well,
now,
and in large measure, it depends on
profiteering. Well, I don't know what it is.
Well, on the gas, a lot of times it depends on when they were refilled last and what price they paid for it then. Which could explain
yes.
They're still being a little bit higher. The eggs,
yes.
I guess the eggs goes back to the food chain because there's been a lot of discussion on the web today, and you may have seen some of it, about the disruptions in the food chain and the problems the farmers are having now and also having going forward with all these restrictions because you can imagine all these farmers, you know, in the valleys in California where much of our produce comes from. This stuff has got to be harvested by somebody, and if they're all going to be expected to comply with these social distancing things, it's going to be tough to get the crop in. Thanks, Sean. I appreciate the call. 6:23 here on the Bobby Mac Show. Richard is next up. Hi, Richard. Welcome to the Bobby Mac Show.
Hey, Bobby Mac. Thanks for taking my call. 2 points. The first one just kind of came out. Apparently, first time I heard this, I stopped by to pick up some shoes that I have that I've shined them in. And he said the county or whatever shut them down, put them in the same classification as nail salons as far as transmission of COVID. He said that the shoes themselves have, you can get COVID out of your shoes. I've never heard that, but it may have just been the way he interpreted what the county person said.
But okay.
The main reason I called on this emergency act, if the government, because the governor does it, because all the cities and all are going to be sending recommendations and resolutions. So it's probably going to happen. I've already called Greenville County, the desk officer, and said, well, what will happen, you know, because some of the other states, they're going to where you have to have a card or a letter saying you can go. And I'm a primary caregiver for my 85-year-old mother, and I have to go from Greer to Greenville to check on her at night. And, you know, where will we go to get something like that? And
I think in that instance, Richard, you probably would not need one. And if you were to be stopped and you were explained the purpose of your trip, that would fall under the category of an essential medical procedure that you needed to assist with.
Yeah, because, I mean, all the things you're reading about, you know, I did a weapons check 2 weeks ago, and I was like, well.
I can tell you this. Homeland Security, I guess it's been 3 weeks ago now, issued to me and to others essentially a get-out-of-jail-free card is the way I refer to it, which is a piece of paper that explains that I am in an essential industry, and the reason that I am on the roads and traveling during a stay-at-home order is performing a job that is part of an essential industry. And I know that other people who find themselves in essential businesses as well also have received some sort of letter, and I'm assuming that they are from Homeland Security as well.
Well, and that's my question, okay, because if the way I understand this thing, the president can't mandate people to stay at home. That has to go to the states, actually, the governors or whatever have to make that.
That's right. That is a state responsibility. That's correct.
But the Homeland Security, will that override what the states have done? I mean, now we're getting into, and I know you don't know, I'm just asking questions because it could be bad for, you know, it could be, you know, so many other people, and if you understand where I'm going, it could be pretty bad for who has authority, because that's what's going on right now with the city of Greenville. They're doing a resolution, you can operate on a resolution if it's passed. They'll go ahead and shut everything down or make everybody stay home.
And that's what they may have on their agenda for their 10 a.m. tomorrow morning meeting. We'll see. And it depends on what specifically is outlined in their stay-at-home order. But virtually all of the ones that have been implemented include situations for the one that you were describing, where you have somebody that needs medical assistance. That's one of those where you would be allowed to travel. Thanks, Richard. I appreciate the call. Let me get to Jeremy in Greenville. He is next up here, Bob, on the Bob Ingram Show. Hey, Jeremy, how are you this evening?
I'm doing good, sir. How are you doing today?
Yes, sir. I'm fine and dandy. Thank you.
That's great. So I've been listening to some of the things that you're talking about, and what concerns me is, isn't there a writ of habeas corpus that needs to be given from the president in order for the states to make that kind of a ruling to tell everybody how to stay home?
Apparently not, because we already have governors in, I guess, essentially a slim majority of states that already have implemented those things. And we've seen habeas corpus ignored in the past, in a number of situations, post 9/11 would be one.
So I guess that would just totally trump the Constitution altogether, then, huh?
So to speak.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, I'm praying for a lot of those families out there that are staying at home, you know, not from their own will. And I hope that if they need any help out there, that hopefully their neighbors can come together and help feed them and give them any water that they need. And especially help to give them some clean materials that they need so that we can all stay safe and hopefully get this thing surpassed and get back to our regular lives if that's possible.
Amen. And the sooner the better. Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate the call. 628 here on the Bobby Mac Show, and in on the text line, 71307. Bobby, thank you for introducing Mr. Pelosi. I now know the identity of the single most desperate man in America. Yeah, this story about Nancy Pelosi's husband. We'll get to that on the other side of the news. Meantime, Nancy has been busy as well. She is busy forming new committees with subpoena powers to take over oversight of how the administration has handled COVID-19. COVID-19. This is just what we need. All the people that are out there working, trying desperately to bring this thing to a conclusion. The last thing they need is to be subpoenaed to come testify before some bogus committee from Adam Bullschiff or Nancy Pelosi. Be right back here on the Bobby Mack Show. Annie's ready to go in the news center. 6:29 here on the Thursday edition on WORD. Welcome back. Thanks for sharing part of this gorgeous Thursday evening with me here on the Bobby Mack Show, 24 before 7 o'clock. Here is the headline from the article today at the Barron's website. That's a financial website if you're not familiar with them. Nancy Pelosi's husband scooped up Amazon Facebook stock. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi recently disclosed that her husband Paul has acquired more Amazon and Facebook stock. Paul Pelosi, a businessman and investor, used options to acquire Amazon stock and sold Amazon options. He also used options to acquire Facebook stock. The disclosure made in a form Speaker Pelosi filed February 11th with the Office of the Clerk of the U.S. House of Representatives. See, we thought she was all wrought up with the impeachment of President Trump at that time. Actually, she was casting a jaundiced eye on the market as well. Think her husband was operating with inside knowledge? Paul Pelosi used call options to acquire 3,000 Amazon shares on January 16th for $1,600 each, a total of $4.8 million. On the same day, he sold 20 Amazon call options to buy shares for $1,700 each. Let's see, that's a profit of $1,000 a share, and sold 20 Amazon call options to buy shares for $1,600 each, both sets of options set to expire January 17. Paul Pelosi valued the two sales of the options in the range of $250,000 to $500,000. Specific figures aren't required for disclosure. Speaker Pelosi's husband also used options to acquire 3,000 Facebook shares. Paul Pelosi didn't respond to a request for comment on his transactions. The Pelosis didn't own any Amazon stock at the end of 2018, the latest annual report, only stock options, and they haven't acquired any Amazon stock since, according to regulatory records. So he's been busy delving into Wall Street. Meantime, his significant other has been busy. House Speaker Pelosi announcing today she's creating a new House committee to oversee the coronavirus response that will have subpoena power to seek information from the Trump administration. Here we go, another witch hunt. It would have subpoena power, that's for sure, she said. It's no use having a committee unless you have subpoena power, she said during a teleconference with reporters today. And we would hope that there would be cooperation because this is not a kind of investigation of the administration. It's about the whole response. Gee, what do you think? What do you think they will discover? You think they'll find that the president's done a terrific job? Meantime, Representative Jim Clyburn, Democrat, South Carolina, will chair the House Select Committee on the coronavirus crisis. The committee will be bipartisan, she said, right, with Democrats and GOP members appointed, unlike the 9/11 style after action committee to investigate missteps in the coronavirus response that Representative Adam Bullschiff and others have proposed. Pelosi said this committee is designed to address the here and now, specifically considering the allocation of the historic amount of federal funds directed to economic recovery. Well, Nancy, it was you and other demon rats in the House that wanted to add on more money to it. So there is that. Oh, and by the way, the speaker was not through. U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said yesterday she hopes vote-by-mail provisions can be part of the next coronavirus response plan being put together by House Democrats. I bet she'd love that. Between all the ballot harvesting and everything else they do. Speaking in a conference call, Pelosi said at least $2 billion was needed to enable voting by mail in order to give citizens a safe way to vote during the coronavirus pandemic. Well, who says it's still going to be around by Election Day? She said Democrats had gotten just $400 million for that purpose in a recent bill. And then there's a list here. This is in reference to some of the individuals like Dr. Fauci and goes back and revisits some of their emails from the past that, for instance, Dr. Fauci sent to the Hillary Clinton private email server to Cheryl Mills, subject, remarks of Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton at a world in transition, charting a new path in global health. Very rarely does a speech bring me to tears, but this one did it. Talk about telling it like it is. This was a having difficulty reading it. Please tell the secretary that I love her more than ever. You guys too, of course. Well, that's nice. Hillary's got a fan in Dr. Fauci. And then he sent another one in January of 2013 to Cheryl Mills. Anyone who had any doubts about the secretary's stamina and capability following her illness had those doubts washed away by today's performance before the Senate and the House. I'm assuming this is about Benghazi. She faced extremely difficult circumstances at the hearing, and still she hit it right out of the park. Please tell her that we all love her and are very proud to know her. Warm regards, Tony. Okay, good to know. Dr. Fauci, a big fan of Hillary and the foundation. Think about what type of mindset would send that kind of letter and communication. Would a person of reasonable disposition send that kind of email to anyone in their professional network? Would you ever consider writing a letter to your employer, the family of your employer, declaring your undying love and devotion toward them? Rarely does a speech bring me to tears. Please tell her I love her more than ever. Please tell her that we all love her. I mean, seriously, you know, if you ever engaged in a large system, a large business, or a large network of professionals, how would you react to a person inside that organization who was sending this kind of non-professional love letter? I mean, what exactly does that say about the emotional stability of somebody like that? Would you ever consider writing a letter like that to your wife or husband's boss? And yet this guy right now, with his inherent sensibility, has the most consequential and direct influence over the decision-making within the world's most powerful nation. Pretty stunning stuff. I just hope that somewhere along the way, and look, I know that the medical professionals are the ones who are giving the president the lion's share of advice on what needs to be done here. But if Fauci, who I don't frankly trust, and these other epidemiologists, and we hear that Dr. Birx is also a big fan of Hillary and the Clinton Foundation, if the president is making his decisions based on what the epidemiologists are telling him, at some point, can we hear from an economist also about What's going on? Inquiring minds want to know. Quarter before seven here on the Bobby Mack Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 6:48 now, dozen minutes before 7 o'clock here on the Bobby Mack Show. Lots of goofy things going on in the current environment. Maybe the strangest was the railroad engineer who tried to attack the hospital ship with his locomotive. Do you hear about this? This is truly off the charts. Jonathan Turley, writing today at Zero Hedge, there are many surreal aspects to this pandemic, but Eduardo Marino is still something of a standout. The California engineer, that's train engineer, attempted to ram his locomotive into the USNS Mercy, that's a hospital ship, because he was suspicious of its real purpose in Los Angeles. I know, you're stunned to hear this happen in California. His effort took the train off the rails and across a remarkable distance before stopping short of the ship. The family has started a GoFundMe page that cryptically says, Eddie is not hurt physically, but isn't with us at this time. Yeah, he has a previous commitment in the Gray Bar Hotel. The case has resulted in a relatively rare federal charge of train wrecking. I didn't even know it was on the books. By handing Marino over to the feds, state authorities minimized his defense options and maximized the potential sentencing. This is really bizarre. Marino was operating a Pacific Harbor Line train on March 31st, when he decided to try to reach the ship by running his locomotive up to high speed. According to the U.S. attorney, Marino ran the train off the end of the tracks, crashed through a series of barriers, before coming to rest, more than 250 yards from the Mercy. KTLA, local TV station in L.A., reports that Marino said he wanted to wake people up and hope the derailment would get media attention so people could see for themselves. See what? We're left to guess. Firefighters responded around 12:30 in the afternoon Tuesday to the port, where the train came to rest about 250 yards from the Mercy after crashing through a series of barriers. No injuries were reported, but it did trigger a fuel spill that prompted a hazmat cleanup. Marino tried to flee the scene, but was detained by a California Highway Patrol officer who witnessed the incident. Can you imagine this chips guy sitting in his car or on his motorcycle, whichever it was, and he's watching this wacko train engineer run the train completely off the tracks, trying to hit a ship docked in the port? The officer reported seeing the train smash through a concrete barrier, a steel barrier, and a chain-link fence before sliding across a parking lot filled with gravel, coming to rest against another chain-link fence. The officer told investigators that when he spoke with Marino, the suspect said things like, "You only get this chance once. The whole world is watching. I had to. People don't know what's going on here. Now they will." Still not clear to me how the train could have possibly reached the ship, despite traveling over a pretty impressive distance after derailing. That fact could be used to contest allegations of an intended collision as opposed to the current charge of train wrecking. Nevertheless, that brings a potential 20-year jail sentence. We have never addressed a train wrecking charge before on this blog. Since we are unlikely to have another occasion soon, here is the provision. Whoever willfully derails, disables, or wrecks any train, engine, motor unit, or car used, operated, or employed in interstate or foreign commerce by any railroad, or willfully sets fire to, and then it goes on to describe other things you can do, whoever willfully attempts to do any of the aforesaid acts or things shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years or both. As indicated by the family statement, the only defense is not to contest these elements, but Marino's mental state seems rather that at age 44, he has a questionable mental state. To put it mildly, he could not explain the basis for his suspicions or why he thought a hospital ship had some nefarious purpose. Prosecutors simply recommended that Marino confessed after he tried to flee the scene and said that he was suspicious of the Mercy and believing it had an alternate purpose related to COVID-19 or a government takeover. He also later said that he wanted to wake people up. Whew, wow. Marino's efforts to flee and his operation of the locomotive could present a problem for the defense. Yeah, I would think so. It's better suited for a diminished capacity or irresistible impulse defenses, which, by the way, are no longer allowed. Many doctors have rightfully objected to the elimination as ignoring available science on the scope and variation of mental illness. The Alabama Supreme Court had it right in 1887 in Parsons versus State when it held that it is not enough to simply conclude that a defendant could tell right from wrong. So we'll see how things work out. See you tomorrow. Here's Satchmo. God bless.